I'd like to encourage you to take out a Bible, open it, read with us, think along with the thoughts that will be presented in the lesson in the next few moments. If you have an Old Testament, turn to Numbers chapter 25. Numbers chapter 25. Changes in cultural values are usually very subtle and very gradual, almost imperceptible. Things change around us and we might be busy, we might be distracted with other things, we might be aware on some level that things are changing, but it might not be particularly on a conscious level. And then something comes along sort of out of the ordinary, something rather bold and shocking, and we realize all at one time how far things have gone. And I think our entire nation has gone through that sort of an awakening in the past week. Super Bowl has been talked about an awful lot over the past week. A lot of post-game analysis, only it doesn't have much to do with the game. It's got a whole lot to do with halftime. And I'd like for us to use that event that occurred last Sunday evening as a platform to talk further in the lesson this morning about the moral fabric of our nation, the influences that have been and are being brought to bear, particularly with an emphasis upon what might be happening in my family and how these influences might be insidiously working their way into our own thinking without us even realizing what is going on. In Numbers chapter 25, in this place in Israel's history, they're on their way to Canaan. They've been disciplined by God in the wilderness. They're nearing their goal, and a prophet by the name of Balaam has been employed by a king who fears the Israelites to bring a curse upon them. And as we read through the history, we find that Balaam has been unable to do that. God has prevented him from so pronouncing the curse upon Israel. But nonetheless, we find that Israel falls into great immorality. And I'd like for us to see just a little bit that's revealed to us in the Scriptures as to how that happened. But in Numbers chapter 25, begin reading with me in verse 1, "Then Israel remained in Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab. They invited the people to the sacrifice of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel was joined to Baal of Peor, and the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel." And as we continue reading through that chapter, which we won't do this morning, in God's anger, He breaks out in a plague against the people, and the immorality is staunched by the faithful few who stand up for the Lord, and they eradicate the evil that is among them. But you don't find out the whole story of what happened with Israel in this particular passage. Go over to Numbers 31, and we find sort of an epilogue, an explanation in passing almost that we can skip over in Numbers 25, if we're not aware of Numbers 31, particularly in verse 16. Reflecting upon some current events, and as they perhaps related to what has happened already with the Israelites being joined to Baal of Peor and falling into harlotry, the observation here is made, Numbers 31 and verse 16, "Look, these women caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam, to trespass against the Lord in the incident of Peor, and there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord." That isn't said back in Numbers 25. We begin to get some insight into what happens. Balaam can't curse the people directly, so what does he do? He provides counsel to them, encourages them to be undermined morally and spiritually by joining the women of Moab who serve the god of Baal. And so it's by Balaam's influence, by his undermining advice that Israel is compromised sexually and spiritually, incurring the anger of God. And there's one more passage to put together, I think, to fill out the story. In 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 15, we're told there in the New Testament, Balaam loved the wages of righteousness. So do you get the picture now? Balaam, who is a prophet, loves money. He's greedy and he's covetous. And he tries to ally himself with Balak, but God prevents this direct curse to be pronounced upon the people. So eventually what Balaam says is, I can get them another way. I will advise the people of Moab how to compromise the Israelites. And I will receive a reward for doing that. And so because Balaam loved the wages of unrighteousness, he gives counsel to the Moabites as to how they can bring the wrath of God indirectly upon Israel. If he can't do it directly, they can do it indirectly by enticing the Israelite males to commit harlotry, fornication, with the women of Moab. Not a whole lot has changed in the past 3,500 years. There are people today who, for gain, will undermine the morals of other people. They will make it their job. They will make it their business. They will apply themselves mightily any way they can for a buck to destroy others morally and in our nation socially. Most of us do realize, I think if we're thoughtful, what's been going on in our nation for the past 20 plus years especially. It's been going on longer than that. But we are becoming a perverted, a profane, and a pornographic nation. What we got at halftime last week was just a quick little snapshot out of the normal context. And that's really what's been fussed about so much in the last week. It's really not been about the nudity of Janet Jackson. It's not been a denial that we can see this kind of stuff on television. We certainly can. It just takes a certain time of the day and changing the channel around a little bit. You can find Janet Jackson and worse on television, even now. But the fuss has really been, well, it was a time for families to sit down together and watch this sporting event, and so we don't expect to see Janet Jackson's anatomy. And that's really been the source of the outcry. But let me suggest to you that that's my second screen. Wait a minute. No, here we go. All right. I love electronics. What we find happening in the case, I think, of the Super Bowl debacle closely reflects what happens in a less technological way with Balaam. We find that for profit, there is a deliberate undermining of morals, leading inevitably, if it's not reversed, to a collapse of society, because that's what happens to societies who become grossly immoral. But what happens is you take an unprincipled desire for economic profit, which Balaam had, which apparently CBS has and the NFL has. Our society is economically driven. And as the morals begin to decline, the economic success will be achieved in the minds of some at any cost. But when we take unprincipled economic profit and we add to it radical permissiveness, which is the direction in which our society has been going, radical permissiveness, anything goes. You add to that technology that brings the immorality right into our living room and dumps it down there in the middle of the floor for us and our children to see. And you add to that an insatiable need for amusement. We feel it's our constitutional right to be amused, to enjoy recreation. And the broadcasters and the National Football League understand that. They understand what makes you tick. They understand what makes me tick. They know that we're going to watch things that will amuse us and entertain us. And when you take this whole mix and you put it together, what you get is a downward spiral of morality, and this is how it works, at least in the case of what happened last Sunday night. Profit, not P-R-O-P-H-E-T, but P-R-O-F-I-T, profit was behind, economic profit was behind Justin Timberlake encouraging Janet Jackson to have a wardrobe malfunction. What happens is the television rights to broadcast the Super Bowl are extremely expensive. And CBS wanted to televise the Super Bowl. And they paid, I don't know what the figure was, but I'm sure it was probably several billion dollars to televise the Super Bowl. And what that means is that CBS is going to have to sell a lot of expensive advertising to pay for the rights to broadcast the Super Bowl. So what that means is now a company is going to be paying, I think some of the figures were over $2 million for a 30-second commercial. That doesn't even make sense. Does that make sense to you? Maybe it does to Bart. He's in advertising. But I don't understand $2.4 million for 30 seconds. That doesn't compute with me. But anyway, it computes with others. So a company is going to pay $2.4, $2.5 million for a 30-second commercial. What kind of commercial do you think they want to show? They want to show a commercial that's going to grab you. They want to show a commercial that's edgy. They want to throw something out there that's going to make everybody talk about it. In fact, that's what a lot of the publicity before the Super Bowl was about, was what kind of commercials we're going to see. Because they always roll out the best for the Super Bowl. So they hire agencies to distribute, to create and distribute these mini movies, these shows called commercials. What they want is the audience to be kept in front of the television to watch the commercials so that the commercials can be sold for a certain amount of money so that CBS recoups its expenses on broadcasting the Super Bowl, and the NFL ends up profiting mightily in the end of it because they want to keep the advertisers happy. So the way that you keep the advertisers happy, the way that you keep people tuned in during halftime is you hire MTV to produce this halftime show that is raunchy and rotten and disgusting. And what is driving the whole thing is profit. Just like Balaam, who loved the wages of unrighteousness, was willing to sell out the Israelites and compromise them morally by advising the Moabites how to do it. This is how you entice them. And if anybody thinks that Janet's wardrobe malfunction was accidental, as the old saying goes, there's some swampland in Florida that might be of interest to you. This is all contrived. It is deliberate. What was miscalculated. And one can almost forgive them for miscalculating it because we've swallowed so much. We've taken so much. We've watched more and more and more that they probably felt like, number one, it'll just be added publicity for Janet's flagging career. And secondly, there might be a little whimper about it, but in time people will forget. They always do. Perhaps a slight miscalculation there, but I wonder in my own mind, irregardless of the tempest in the teapot in the last week, is it really going to make a difference? So we have this drive for economic profit, willing to sell morals down the river in order to, on the one hand, make a profit for themselves, and by the end result of all of that, encouraging our society to collapse. That's bad enough. But there's a whole different angle to what is happening in our society regarding Hollywood and its influence in our culture that goes beyond just simply making a profit. I think there's something deeper than just making a profit. And to tell you the truth, this scares me more than the other. Because I've seen examples, and so have you, where Hollywood has been willing to forfeit the profit in order to preach their message. And what lies deeper than making a profit in this regard is that Hollywood really no longer is an entertainment business. It is an evangelistic business. And I'm going to do everything within my power in this sermon and in occasional sermons to come. Folks, I told the elders when I came here, I really didn't think I had a soapbox. This is as close as it comes to me having a soapbox, and I'm going to get on it this morning. Hollywood, and by that I mean movies and television and music, is destroying the fabric of our nation, and they're not doing it just for a profit. They're doing it because it's what they believe in. They're evangelizing, they're preaching, and they are converting people to their point of view, to their value system. Everybody in here probably knows that some of the most high-grossing movies of all time have been G-rated movies. Do you see Hollywood flocking to make a bunch of G-rated movies? No. You see, it's not all just about profit. It's about preaching. They are preaching their message. And I don't believe some of us realize that. I think we're still in the entertainment mode. Hollywood's about entertainment. Oh, yeah, there's some bad entertainment, but there's some good entertainment. Well, that may be true in and of itself. There may be some good entertainment. There is some bad entertainment. There's a lot of bad entertainment. But it's not about entertainment anymore. It is about preaching their morality or lack thereof. So let's talk about some of the doctrines. What is it that Hollywood is preaching? What is the message? What are the convictions that they're trying to influence others to believe? Well, I think one of the most obvious things that all of us can see, and this isn't going to be a big revelation probably to many of us, but I do want us to try to see it all in one package so that we really get it for what it is. But Hollywood obviously believes that there should be no restrictions on sexual expression, and that anybody that suggests otherwise is, pick your term, fundamentalist, backward, repressive, censorious. Hollywood really believes that it's restriction on sexual behavior that causes the problem, not the sexual expression of itself. And there used to be a phrase used, although it's beginning to fade in practical terms, the phrase consenting adults used to be used to describe this. Well, nobody should interfere with what consenting adults want to do in their own private lives. Well, number one, it's not about consenting adults anymore. And number two, it's not about their private lives anymore. What Hollywood really believes is anybody, children included, anybody should be exposed. I heard with my own two ears in a political commentary show on television, someone, and I'll use the term loosely, of a liberal persuasion, actually arguing that there's no reason why any parent should have objected to watching the Super Bowl, the halftime show, with their child. We no longer in these folks see a concern for young people being exposed to those kinds of images. That is not of concern to them. It's not about consenting adults. It's about liberating children from what they consider to be sexual repressiveness in our society. Liberating children from the oversight of their parents. And we'll talk about that more as the lesson goes on. But this is one of the main principles of Hollywood doctrine. There should be no restrictions on sexual expression. And so they encroach and encroach and encroach deeper and deeper and deeper into what at least used to be called the family hour. When is that? When is the family hour when you can sit down and watch television with your family and not be grossly offended if you have any standards whatsoever? And that in part is what the Super Bowl exhibitionism was about. Another encroachment, another brick out of the wall to, in their minds, repress the free expression of sexualism. Secondly, sin has no side effects. Happiness, freedom, popularity, and success are the only byproducts of being liberated, of being enlightened. The devastating consequences, especially of sexual sins, but of others as well, are rarely portrayed in a meaningful way by Hollywood. The disease, the guilt, the self-loathing, the perversion, the loneliness, the crime, the debt that comes out of this kind of unrestrained behavior. Hollywood doesn't want to portray that. unless it's from the standpoint of describing these stars that have been through these kinds of situations in their lives, and they've worked their way out of it through therapy, and we pat them on the back and think they're so wonderful. Sin has no negative side effects according to how it's portrayed by Hollywood. Thirdly, all religious people are ignorant bigots and hypocrites. In fact, it's even worse than that. As I've just indicated a moment ago, Hollywood, and just generally the postmodern mindset, believes that religious thought is dangerous. Did you read any of the articles about Ms. Cox in the last week, who proposed that the word evolution be taken out of the curriculum? Did you notice how much of the argumentation that was offered was merely circumstantial and pragmatic? But the basic idea is it will damage the children in the state of Georgia to not be taught evolution and instead be taught creation by design. It damages people to restrict sexual freedom and expression. It damages people to live by the precepts of morality and righteousness. It's worse than just simply how religious people are looked at. Anymore, the concept is it's harmful to society to prevent people from acting in these immoral ways that they desire. We're also told this in one form or another by Hollywood. Moral degeneracy is natural. Any aberration is a disease. That is, to just be freely expressive sexually, to exchange partners at will, to be involved in whatever one wants to be involved in, we're told long and loud that these are just natural behaviors. This is just a man or a woman doing what comes naturally. In fact, we've made allusions in other sermons to the idea that in Time or Newsweek magazine, there have been articles, front page articles, adultery is genetically programmed within the human species. In order to provide the most viable products of humanity, the survival of the fittest, that we're genetically programmed to have serial sexual relations in order to produce the strongest of the species. I'm not making that up. That has been argued in many different ways, that we're genetically programmed. And then if something goes terribly wrong, we're told that person is just diseased. That is, they're not acting on the negative consequences of immorality. There's something wrong with that person. They're defective. It's not the moral choice that was made to start with. So any restriction, any repression of sexuality is said to be fighting against nature. And then when you have a predator, you have a serial rapist, you have someone else come along and do something horrendous out of all of those desires that have been fomented within the individual, we're told, well, that's just a sickness. That's a defective person there. Otherwise, all these things are good and desirable. And we're also being told long and loud that traditional gender roles are passé. We get this in nearly everything Hollywood produces. Men are stupid. Women don't need men for income, happiness, for children, or anything else. We're getting this over and over and over and over. And we get it in a lot of commercials. Another one of my pet peeves on my little soapbox here, another plank in my soapbox. But in just about any commercial you watch, it has a man and a woman. The man's going to be the idiot, and the woman's going to straighten out everything. I just think it's sad, but on the other hand, it's very amusing that we'll accept something in one context, but if we flipped it around, it would be anathema to our society. You could not reverse those kinds of commercials and make the women look that way. But it's socially acceptable to bash men continually and say how worthless they are. Do you think that's accidental? Do you think it's accidental that any kind of a company that you can think about reverts to that theme to sell their product? Why do you think they do that? Because there's an ideology behind it. Because they're preaching. And they think they're finding a responsive chord in our society. That people want to reject the traditional roles. And they want to accept the liberated view, if you will, of men and women and their relationship with one another. And so we get this incessant attack upon the male and the exaltation of the female because it reflects the ideology of the people who are making the entertainment for consumption. Well, you know these things, though. I mean, you see this. You see it every time you turn your television on. What I want us to see is to just really reflect on it all at one time. And that's not all. It's just all we have time for. But further, I want us to also take a look at how it's done. What's the methodology? Those are some of the planks in the doctrinal viewpoint. Now, what do they do to advance their cause? How do they actually evangelize? Well, one thing that we have seen happening in the Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson episode brings out is the issue of desensitization. The attempt to make us unshockable so that we are willing to accept more of their aberrant view. And these people are very smart. They know exactly what they're doing. They know you cannot move morally in regard to values. You can't move a person from here and put him over here all in one fell swoop. So what they do is they take a person or a culture, society, where they are, and they just want to move them a little bit. Get them used to that, to where they now think this is normal. Being here is normal. Hearing these words are normal. Seeing these images, well, that's normal. Oh, and now we got normal. And they just move that a little bit. And after a while, this is now normal. And everybody comes to accept the fact that these words and these images and these storylines and these doctrines that we see repeated, this is normal. And then they move a little bit, and they move a little bit, and they move a little bit until you know what happens. We're over here and we go, how did we get Janet Jackson's anatomy in the Super Bowl halftime? How did we get here? And there's hand-wringing and, oh, well, I don't know. How did we get here? Well, that's how we got there. One little step at a time. And what happens also is when you, along the way, you normalize every current place that you're at. You put the onus on those who object as being out of the mainstream. Once you get people to accept that this is normal, if anybody points backwards and says, wait a minute, look how far we're moving, well, they're made to look like an idiot, a fundamentalist, out of step with what's going on. So that normalizing this process all along the way makes the dissenters appear to be the ones that are out of step. And so we have this gradual process of desensitization. And I want to tell you, there are several ways this is done. It's not just by throwing a word in on a television show, which that's one of the ways it's been done. Vulgar language, we've just come to accept, you know, to the point now that I'm sure you've read that in the paper, the word that Bono used on live television last year, I think at the Grammy Awards. You know what word I mean. And the FCC looks at this word and says, oh, well, that's really not offensive. That's one of the ways it's done. But I want to tell you another way it's done. It's more subtle than that. Have you ever noticed in the past, I don't know, especially 5 years or so, not that I go to a lot of movies, I don't, but have you noticed that not only in movies but on television as well, gross bodily functions are now depicted in nearly every movie you see? Someone is urinating, someone is defecating, somebody's throwing up. Nearly every movie. And it's done oftentimes in humorous context, so we laugh about it. Look what happened over there. I'm going to tell you what Hollywood's doing to you. They're breaking you down. They're making you unshockable. And they'll argue that and say, well, it's normal. People do that, you know. But what it's doing is it's making us impervious to other things that are going to come along later that they want us to swallow. And if you can get people to not be shocked by anything anymore, be it a body function or a word a vulgar word. You're opening the door to get them to accept shocking moral viewpoints. This is calculated. It is deliberate. Somebody's trying to get you. This is not about entertainment. It is about evangelism. They're wanting to convert you, and they're doing a very good job at converting our neighbors. I hope not converting us. Other ways in which we are desensitized, I've already mentioned one, humor. Get people to laugh at it. Beer commercials do it the best. They have the funniest, most intriguing little storylines in their 30-second commercials. They get us to laugh. It's done also through violence. And I'll tell you how we even contribute to that. Great special effects in that movie. What is it doing? It breaks down the shockableness of an individual. If you can see people die in many grotesque and horrible ways, and these things have been acted out now in our society by young people who can't anymore distinguish between fiction and reality, get them to accept the grotesqueness of bodily functions, offensive language, violence, so that when you want to then insert a doctrine for them to accept, they're more susceptible to doing it because their resistance has been broken down. And then we've got this thing called false continuums. And this goes back to the gradual changes. Here's what happens. Elvis happens. And then from Elvis, it gets worse, and it gets worse, and it gets worse, and it gets worse, until you have Janet Jackson or Michael or any number of other filthy people who are in the entertainment business pandering immorality off. What happens? Somebody says, we ought not to see that anatomy on television with our families. And you know what the answer is? They said the same thing when Elvis swiveled his hips. And you know what that's called? It's called a false continuum. They're saying, this thing that happened on the Super Bowl is no different than what happened over here with Elvis. No different. Can you believe that? Exposing a part of the body on national television, in their minds, you're just doing the same thing that Elvis. And you remember what I said? Every time you normalize something, anybody that objects is thought of as being extreme. And so now you've even got people in the last week arguing there really was nothing wrong with what happened on the halftime show last week. That's how far we've come. And part of it is this false continuum. Well, what happened last week is no different than what Elvis did. Whether Elvis should have done what he did or not, or whether it should have been shown or not, is a separate issue. But I'm going to tell you something. I may not know a whole lot in this world, but I know the difference between what happened last Sunday and Elvis. I know the difference in that. They're not the same thing. And yet we're being told, we've got the problem. We've got the problem. How else are their messages being peddled? Disparaging religion, especially Christianity. It is so interesting to me, though I haven't seen The Passion of Christ. It isn't open yet, and I'm not going to openly advocate it. But I do think it is interesting to see how our society reacts to a movie that is purportedly accurate according to the text of the Bible. And the outcry and how it's going to inflame people and it should be censored and it's politically inflammatory and blah, blah, blah. But we can turn right around and say, but we ought to be able to watch any and every immoral display that we can think of. Do you think that's just like accidental? That our society has moved to the point of objecting? In fact, I just caught a headline on the, I think it's in the sports page today, about in a high school playoff game, a wrestling match, they had the audacity to open it with a prayer. And now everybody's wringing their hands. Oh, we can say a prayer during the regular season, but oh, we had this post-seasonal competition. Oh, somebody messed up and they actually said a prayer. What are we going to do? We're going to have to review this. A prayer was said. wringing our hands over saying a prayer, and yet the fiasco of last Sunday night is advocated. Disparaging of religion. If it has to do with religious things, if it has to do especially with Christianity, if it's an accurate portrayal, purportedly, of the crucifixion of Christ, that's damaging. That's damaging. That's terrible. You know, religion, it's just been the cause of all the world problems. By declaring any contrary view or restriction, censorship, anybody objects, oh, you're trying to censor. You're trying to censor. Well, isn't it interesting that ESPN had a show on for the last year or two called Playmakers that depicted a National Football League team and had stories of drugs and alcohol and adultery and all of this? And you know what the NFL did? And you know what Gatorade did, one of the sponsors? They objected to the portrayal of the National Football League in that light. And you know what ESPN has done? They've withdrawn the series. But that's not censorship if they do it, is it? It's only censorship if spiritual people stand up and say, this filth is rotting the morals of our nation. And our society is collapsing all around us. Oh, censorship. We can't censor. First Amendment, you know. By doublespeak. This is how it happens sometimes. Violence, immorality is portrayed because it's realistic. We're told this is the way it is in real life. So this is the way people talk. This is the way people act. So we're just only portraying what's realistically happening. Well, let me tell you what's wrong with that. There's two things wrong with it. Number one, it's not true. In real life, and I don't mean to be overly grotesque, in real life, prostitutes are ugly. They are. In Hollywood, they're not. They're Julia Roberts in Hollywood. In real life, unrestricted sex causes diseases. In real life, homosexuality is a filthy and degenerate subculture. In real life, not everyone cheats on their spouse. In real life, fights break bones. In real life, the police aren't stupid. In real life, not all religious people are hypocrites. You see, Hollywood isn't portraying what's real, first of all. But the second thing they will say is, if you challenge them as to their influence in society, they will turn right around and say, it's just make-believe. Don't you think people know that this is fiction? Which way is it, Hollywood? Is it real life or is it fiction? Well, it depends on who's talking to them. And it depends on the circumstance. And this is doublespeak. We're just portraying real life. Oh, it's just fiction. They're going to say whatever they can say in the circumstance to deflect attention away from themselves and away from taking responsibility for what they're doing to our culture. By becoming role models, they deny this influence. When somebody acts out what they've seen in a movie or they follow the example of someone else and kill somebody or do some kind of damage, oh, we're not anybody's role model. Makes you wonder why all those advertisers pay all that money on all those shows, like the Super Bowl, $2.5 million for a 30-second commercial, if it doesn't influence people. If these people are not seen as role models, but the fact of the matter is we all know that they are. But here's the most scary tactic used. And it's really one I want us to think about. They want your children. If you're over about 30, they don't really care about you. They want your child. They want to influence your child's thinking. And I want to tell you how well they do that. How many of us know how to operate the VCR, the DVD player? I'm calling for my kids all the time. Help get this thing to work right. Or how many of us are aware of the music that our children are listening to? I mean the lyrics. You're aware of the lyrics in the songs? How many of our children are involved in electronic games or computer games or whatever they're doing, and we just kind of scratch our heads and go, I don't even understand what they're talking about, much less how they play that game. I'm going to tell you what, that is dangerous. And it's deliberate. It is deliberate. These people want to separate us from our children. They want to create a divide. They want us as old fogey adults to just look back, look at it, and step back and say, I don't get it. I don't want to get it. I don't understand. I don't understand the music. I don't understand the styles. I don't understand the language. Can't understand the words of the songs. I really just, I don't know. Go to your room. Do it. Do what you want to do. And guess what? They've got them. Creating a divide between the young and the old. This is something, and interestingly, there's some good books that you can get on this subject from a cultural standpoint and read it. But an ideological divide between children and parents is new in our culture. We say, well, it's the way it's always been, you know. No, it hasn't. That's another lie we've been fed. It hasn't always been that our children look at life differently than we do as parents and adults. That's been created. That has been contrived by mass media outlets. The separation that we feel between ourselves and our children is exactly what Hollywood wants there to be. More often than not in the past, the children align themselves with the values of their parents. Because we didn't have all the electronics bringing other viewpoints in as effectively as they're being brought in today. It's another lie. Do not accept, as a parent, do not accept, this is just the way it is. I guess there's just going to be a wall up between my child and myself. Somebody's trying to steal your child. Just like that little 11-year-old girl was let off on camera. Did that not break your heart? But you know what? It's being done morally. It's being done morally. People want your child because they want to sell them products. But more than that, they want your child to look at life the way they do, not the way you do. Very quickly, we need to be aware of what's going on. We need to be thinkers and not just consumers. We cannot be merely spectators and watch what's happening. 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 11, regarding Satan, we're not ignorant of his devices. Secondly, and I'll say this without qualification, be suspicious of anything produced by Hollywood. They're evangelizing. What values are they trying to get your children to accept? Thirdly, filter, supervise, create disciplined use of various media outlets. Philippians 4 and verse 8, whatsoever things are pure, lovely, good report, virtuous and praiseworthy, to concentrate on those things. And does that describe what we watch and what we listen to? Thirdly, or fourthly, be involved with that entertainment. What are the lyrics? What kind of band is it? What do they stand for? What are they trying to preach as they entertain? Fifthly, constantly reinforce principles of truth, purity, and righteousness when evil is encountered. We're not going to be able to keep it all out. But we need to stand up every time it's expressed and say, you see what they did? You see what they said? You see what they stand for? You see how they're portraying evil? And use those as opportunities to teach our children something else. And don't be afraid to practice avoidance and censorship. Flee sexual immorality, 1 Corinthians 6:18. Flee youthful lust, 2 Timothy 2:22. How long is it going to be before we're just going to have to flee cable and satellite? Folks, where's that line? How far are we from it? I mean, we've all complained, haven't we? You can't watch a sports show without the commercials. Can't watch golf. You can't watch the Super Bowl. You can't, and it's not just the Super Bowl either. You can't watch a sporting event. Why? Because all these people who are wanting you to watch their program are going to titillate you with some kind of a quick commercial to get your interest. How far are we away from merely cutting it off? Because anymore, you hardly can't keep out the bad with the good. Keep out the bad and keep the good. It's increasingly difficult to discriminate. And above all, I think history one day is going to be a harsh critic as to why our culture and our society worshiped entertainers. Why are these people our heroes? Why do we buy People magazine and Us magazine? Why do we read the celebrity columns in the papers? Why do we why do we find an ongoing interest and curiosity about these people who are, for the most part, morally degenerate, in the worst sense, politically liberal? Most of them are not very intelligent, frankly. I know that sounds unkind, but I believe it's true. These are people that make a living by musing other people. Why do we worship them? And why do we compromise ourselves because of them? Does it even make any sense? We need to be aware. We need to be on guard. This is not about entertainment. It's about evangelism. And they are converting. They're doing very well. It's not the most cheery thing to think about. It's kind of hard to extend an invitation to come to the Lord after that, because it's kind of depressing to think about where we are. But isn't that the reason to come out of the world and be what the Lord wants us to be? Jesus offers us a better way to live and a higher standard and perfect and pure and good values to live by. But most of all, He offers us eternal life. We've got to live above this world, and we're not going to do it on our own, because we're going to be dragged down by these forces unless we've got something to fight back with. And that's what the Lord offers to us. If you're subject to the invitation, desire to become a child of God, would you come while we stand and sing?